And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Small is Beautiful. Each of my guests is explaining why small is the new big, whether it's in government, nanotechnology, or consistent lottery winnings. My next guest was a top researcher at the National Institute of Health, that's NIH for short. We'll examine why nanotechnology will loom large in our immediate future with one of this country's leading technologists. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, and that's the same number that you'll use to call in and win four sandwiches or four salads from Urbane Cafe. I'll be giving those away to the third caller that calls in at 639-0008. Urbane Cafe has two locations to serve you, one here in Ventura at 4350 Telephone Road in the Barnes and Noble Plaza. The other is in Oxnard at 1750 East Gonzales Road, the intersection of Rose and Gonzales. Call in, be the third caller calls in at 639-0008, and the four sandwiches or four salads are yours. My next guest, Dr. Stephen J. Houseman, established Houseman Tech Consulting after spending 31 years as a researcher, an administrator, and a senior executive at the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Houseman graduated from the University of Pennsylvania with a BA. He received his PhD from the same institution in the field of immunogenics and transplantation biology. Dr. Houseman specializes in topics related to nanotechnology, robotics, bionics, regenerative medicine and human enhancement, radio frequency identification devices, biometrics, and medical applications of technology. Joining us from the Baltimore, Maryland area. Hi, Dr. Houseman. How are you today?
Billy, thank you very much for the nice introduction.
Well, thank you for being our guest. I love having thought leaders like yourself on the show. But before we get into applications of nanotechnology, please explain what is nanotechnology? Because really, to date, all that I've really seen that has been a product of nanotechnology is IBM's ability to move molecules around to spell out its own name. Not particularly useful.
Not a particularly useful technology. Well, nanotechnology really is the study of manipulating matter at a very small scale. We're talking about a scale of 1 to 100 nanometers. Now, what is a nanometer? That's difficult for a lot of people to grasp. In the metric system, we have the basic unit of measurement as a meter, which is about 39 inches. And a nanometer is 1/1,000,000,000, with a B, the length of a meter.
Wow.
To give you an example, a human hair has a diameter of about 80,000 nanometers.
80,000 nanometers.
80,000 nanometers. A sheet of paper is about 100,000 nanometers thick. So we're dealing with some very, very small scales.
All right, and that makes sense. Now, from nanotechnology, we're going to get really, I think, practical applications, things like nanomotors, nanobots, nanotherapies, things like that. But let's talk, if we can, just a little bit about some of the different applications there might be for nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm. Well, they actually have a huge number of applications. There's an actual inventory of nanoproducts available. The combination of the Wilson Center and the Pew Charitable Trust have created an inventory on their website of about 1,300 current products that use nanotechnology. These things range from socks, for example, that are impregnated with nanosilver to prevent the growth of bacteria, preventing smelly socks. And they're used also to nanosilver again to prevent the growth of bacteria inside refrigerators. Nanoceramics are used in some dental implants or to fill holes in diseased bones. There is a technology called nanoshells, which are very small spheres of gold at the nanoscale level that are coated with antibodies, home in on a tumor, and then are illuminated with far infrared light, heat up and destroy the tumor by overheating it.
Oh, very interesting. And that gets to one of the applications that I wanted to talk to you about. But talk to me about, since we're talking about nanomaterials and silver in particular, talk to me about carbon tubes and some of the applications that we might see from nanoconstruction of carbon tubes.
Right. They're used in a variety of things ranging from reinforcing airplane wings, for example. If you have an epoxy and you fill it with nanotubes, it's much stronger, it's much lighter than the traditional airplane wing. It also can be used to avoid ice buildup on airline wings. There's actually in the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, they call it the Institute for Soldier Nanotechnologies, and they're using carbon nanotubes to reinforce body armor so troops don't have to carry around these very heavy pieces of body armor.
And still be protected from shrapnel, from bullets and that sort of thing.
Shrapnel and guns.
All right. My guest is Dr. Stephen Hausman. We're talking about nanotechnology. And, Stephen, it's 2011. We've mapped the human genome.
We have
the promise of nanotechnology. So let's talk about some of the fundamental questions as nanotechnology relates to healthcare. For example, why do we still have tooth decay? Shouldn't we have a nanotechnology swarming around in our mouth to repair any cavity as they develop?
Well, that's what people hypothesize, and that's what people think will happen in the future, that these very small nanobots will go roaming around the body, take care of tooth decay, take care of atherosclerosis, and a variety of other things. In a sense, that's what I call the nano hype, that the nanobots will be here and everything will be wonderful. And that may happen eventually, but it's quite a ways off at this point.
How far would you say? 20 years in the future? 30 years in the future? Will my grandchildren be taking advantage of this?
I think your grandchildren will be taking advantage of it.
All right, but it's
so
nothing.
I think we're talking 20, 30 years in the future.
All right.
For something like that to have a practical significance. They say that it takes about 50 years from the time a technology is first proposed until it actually becomes ubiquitous. And nanotechnology was first talked about in the late 50s. By Richard Feynman, who is a Nobel-winning physicist. And it's getting to the time where we're getting a lot of products that utilize nanotechnology. The idea of a nanobot is still a little bit far out, but we do have a number of products that use nanotechnology.
Well, let's keep on the nanobot theory of nanobots roaming through our bodies. I mean, we've got plaque buildup in our arteries that leads to stroke, that leads to heart attack.
Right.
Do you foresee a future anytime 20, 30 years down the road where we'll have nanobots that will actually go in and either destroy the plaque or consume the plaque and get rid of any clots before they actually happen?
Well, I actually have in my lectures, I use a film, a cartoon, as it were, of this happening, a nanobot sort of vacuuming up the atherosclerotic plaque from the arteries. It may happen. I would prefer to think that we actually might have some medical interventions before that time.
Really?
Yes.
All right. What's looming on the horizon there that we should be aware of?
Well, there are a variety of drugs. There are dietary interventions and so forth. But I think to have an actual nanobot, those things are very difficult because when you get down to the nanoscale, you run into actual issues of how do you construct these things? Where do they get their power sources from? Now, we have nano machinery in our body now. Our cells really consist of a variety of nano machines. And so if we could somehow learn to create nano machines, most people think of them as mechanical, but they can actually be biological. We could create biological nano machines that would scavenge this plaque from the arteries.
All right. Now, that's interesting, and it leads me down yet another path that I'd like to explore with you because it's not necessarily related to nanotechnology, but how close are we to growing and harvesting our own replacement body parts? Now, Steve Jobs just passed away recently. He needed a liver transplant a couple years ago. He went on the national donors list. He was fortunate enough to get one. Mm-hmm. It clearly didn't last as long as he would have hoped. But how long is it going to be before we can actually harvest our own body parts, create and harvest our own body parts?
We're actually closer to that than you might think. There's a technology available nowadays called 3D printing. Normally when you think of something being printed, it's on a sheet of paper.
Sure.
But now there are prototypes of organs being printed. I know that sounds fantastic, but they have modified inkjet printers to print using cells, and the cells are held together in sort of a gelatinous matrix, and you have layer upon layer of different cells, and they have actually created a variety of organs. They've done bladders so far, and this might come about, I would say, within the next 10 years.
10 years. Now, have any of these parts that have been generated, the bladder, for example, been used in transplants or to heal a human?
Yes, they have. The bladder has.
All right. So we are closer than we might think to that.
I think that's correct.
All right. So what are some of the advantages of printing your own body parts?
Well, if they're your own body parts, then you don't have the issue of rejection. If you have an implanted organ like a heart or a kidney, you have to worry about taking anti-rejection drugs for the rest of your life. If you're able to clone your own cells, using stem cells perhaps, then they're your cells. You don't have to worry about them being recognized as foreign tissue, and you won't have to take any anti-rejection drugs.
Which is a very, very positive thing. Now let's talk about some of the moral and ethical implications of this. What are some of the roadblocks that you might see, either ethically or morally, from creating your own body parts and using them for replacement surgery?
Well, there has been a lot of controversy about stem cells. And where do you get stem cells from? Do you get them from an embryo? There's a lot of controversy about that. But there is also some recent research which shows that you can create individual stem cells customized to your own body from your own body cells. You can manipulate them genetically in culture once they're outside the body, get them multiplied, and have them produce a variety of other cell types. So if there are stem cells created from your own body, I don't really see a moral objection to that.
All right. That makes some sense, and I certainly can see that. But let's apply this technology. Can we use the same technology for producing blood cells and get rid of some of the diseases that we have, like leukemia or hemophilia?
Well, sure. I mean, if you can create stem cells, then stem cells can be used to create almost any tissue or organ in the body, including blood cells.
Wow.
Now, there is actually hypothesized what they call a respirocyte. This was thought about, 8 to 10 years ago. And this is a small pressure vessel on the order of a couple nanometers in diameter that would travel through the circulatory system, much smaller than a red blood cell, and produce oxygen from the body's own glucose. Now, is it near to being produced? Absolutely not. But it's a theoretical construct. And the first step in producing something like that is to have people think that it might be able to be done. Now, that probably is really far away.
We're talking maybe
50 years.
50 years down the line. All right. My
but
guess.
There are blood substitutes that people are working on now that don't have to be mechanical or nanorobotic, so to speak.
Got it. All right. My guest is Dr. Stephen Hausman. We're talking about nanotechnology. I'm going to depart for just a minute, if I can, from the nanotechnology,
sure,
because there's something interesting in your past that piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. Goes way back to 1992. Because of your expertise in genetic disorders, you were actually chosen to be a member of the scientific panel that debated the possibility of extracting DNA from President Abraham Lincoln's remains in order to determine whether he had a Marfan syndrome. First of all, what is Marfan syndrome, and why would it be important to posthumously diagnose President Lincoln of having this?
Well, Marfan syndrome is a genetic disorder of the connective tissue. It's characterized by having a very tall appearance and elongated features, which Lincoln had. And the importance would be that, at least for the individuals who had Marfan, that this would not be an objection or a hindrance to becoming very successful in life.
Okay.
It was an interesting exercise at the time. I guess about 5 or 6 of us met for several days and reviewed what was available in terms of remains of the late president, which wasn't very much. They were blood-encrusted towels from the hotel and things like that. And the outcome we decided was that the technology was not yet available to be able to produce and analyze the DNA without destroying the entire available
sample.
Inventory.
All right. Well, here
so
we
I
are.
I don't think anything has been done with that since.
Okay, I was going to ask you the next question. Here we are 20 years later. Have there been improvements with DNA testing that would allow you to actually extract some DNA without damaging the entire sample?
Absolutely. DNA analysis has really had a lot of strides in recent years. You can even obtain DNA from somebody touching a surface. It's called touch DNA.
Wow.
And they'll leave a little bit of DNA. It's used in forensic research.
And how reliable would something like touch DNA be, especially in a court of law, if you had to prove guilt or innocence based on it?
I'm not a forensic pathologist, but typically most DNA analyses are very accurate. And you have to make sure that nothing is contaminated, of course, and you have to maintain chain of evidence, as you would with any sort of criminal activity. But it's pretty accurate nowadays.
Wow, that's incredible. My guest is Dr. Stephen Hausman. We've been talking about nanotechnology and some of its applications that we should start seeing in our everyday lives in the next few years and possibly in the next few decades. You're also an expert on RFID, Stephen, and I want to invite you back on the show at some future time to talk about RFID, which is an acronym for radio frequency identification, because I think that is an interesting technology. So will you come back at some future date and talk about that?
I would be pleased to, Bill.
That is wonderful. Now, in the meantime, if people are intrigued by what you have to say, that you've piqued their interest, where would you direct them to go on the Internet to learn more about you, learn more about your work?
Well, I have a website. It's www.hausmantech.com. That's HausmanTech.com. And there are also links on that website to one of my other websites, which is www.speakingofscience.com, where I have links to a variety of articles out there on different subjects.
That is great. Stephen, it has been a delight. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure, Bill. It's been a good conversation we've had. Thank you.
Thank you so much.